Well, let's officially begin. We have a huge crowd here, and I don't want everyone to wait. So, good morning. Bonjour. Ni hao. Okay. Thank you for being here this morning at an early hour. We were up, I was with the group from Ireland last night until 1:30 in the pub across the street. So we did not get much sleep. Anyway, it's good to be here. Now, I'm just curious, how many of you love to give presentations? Oh, I see a lot of hands. Good. Well, I know this about you. You're excited to be here. Certainly, unless you're an evangelist, of course, you have created an innovation, a game, or something to make the world better. And so the question I want to answer in my presentation will be, how can you give a pitch, a presentation, that creates desire for what you've created, whether you're working with potential customers or investors? And this is my preview of what I'm going to do. I'm going to introduce you to a four-phase process I've created for delivering a great pitch in English so that you'll understand how to organize your pitch, how to sound persuasive, and how to encourage listeners to adopt or accept what you've created. You should have a copy of this handout, which I've put on a chair in the back. Let me describe what's here quickly. The first page is a summary of what I'm presenting here, but then the following four pages are a summary of an entire one-day workshop that I do all over the world on presentations. So it's a complete course in public speaking on these pages. And you have my permission to copy these, distribute them to anyone you want, all right, if you're working with anyone else. Let me ask you, if you don't mind interactively here, what do you find most challenging and difficult about making presentations? Anyone? When you have to give a presentation, what do you find hardest or most difficult about it?
Keeping someone's attention.
Keeping someone's attention, yes. And there's a real easy way to do it. You talk about them. And I think that's the most overlooked, most important thing any speaker can ever do. Right now, in this room, who is the most important person? It's not me. The most important person in this room right now is sitting in your chair. What most speakers don't realize in the world is this. Presentation should be about you, not the topic. The topic is never as important as the audience. So, for example, if none of you were in this room, would I be here? No. It's the audience that makes the speaker. So a speaker's first job is to be totally audience-centered. And the way to do that, by the way, is with one word. A speaker should be using the word you all the time. You or your or the collective words, we, us, or our. That's the most important word a speaker can use. Anyway, all right, let's begin. Here's the structure I want to present to you. This is an old advertising structure called picture, promise, prove, and push. Let me introduce myself, by the way. My name is Michael Bushmole. My last name is Austrian originally. I live near Seattle in a city right next to Redmond called Sammamish. I've been there 32 years. I have my own business. I train people all over the world to communicate confidently. I have a teaching job in China. I've been going to China for the last 12 years. And I work with everyone you can name in the United States, from the Department of Homeland Security. I've done 54 workshops for Boeing already this year. And I have an enormous number of clients. My background is in religion. I'm a former Roman Catholic priest and monk. So I've had preaching experience from pulpits from Hollywood, California to Crookston, Minnesota, all over the U.S. I've got 10 years working in California hospitals and healthcare, and then 32 years of business on my own. I coached Frank Gaudet at Microsoft in 1986 on a Thursday afternoon. The next day was Friday. He went to New York and released Microsoft stock. So I've been working with Microsoft, doing training now in 7 countries for Microsoft. And anyway, so that's some of my crazy background. I've written a book on PowerPoint. You will see a lot of PowerPoint unusual things, perhaps. I am an artist, a graphic designer, a cartoonist. I've had a comic strip, and I teach that around the world also. Anyways, that's my crazy background. Here's the four phases. Picture. Start out with a picture. You want to get right into their imaginations of the problem. If you've got something that is a solution, can you give us, I'll point these out in detail. Give us a picture of the problem. Next, make us a promise. What's the potential of what you're offering? What benefits will it provide? Third, prove it. Will your solution work, whether it's a product, service, platform, whatever? Can you prove that it will work? And finally, push. You want to ask for the sale or to try a pilot project or something like that. You need to ask, to invite, to encourage. Let's go through the steps of this. And by the way, if you have questions as I'm going along, please feel free to speak up. A thing you can do is this. Start out by painting a picture. After you greet the audience, start out by painting a picture of a current problem in the world or that you're aware of or a need that's facing the community. And I want to give you this example. One of the world's problems is dirty drinking water. All over the world, there's water that is not safe for drinking. The Ganges River, for example, in India. At one end, people put in trash, they put in sewage and so on. At the other end, people bathe in that water and so on. This is a world problem. So, the best way to open a presentation, in my opinion, is with a question. You can open every presentation you ever give with a question, and it's hard to go wrong. So you take the picture of the problem, but put it into a question. So I might start out, if I was doing the dirty drinking water, if that was the problem, I might say, imagine this. What would it be like to wake up every morning with no clean water? There's the question that gets their mind thinking. Then, the second phase, a promise. Make a promise. Now, here's a format I've developed that comes directly from the field of marketing for making a promise to an audience. It has two parts, a preview of what you're going to present and a promise of what they will gain by listening or participating. So the language I like is this. Today, I will. Now you have to get a verb. In my opinion, the laziest verb that speakers everywhere use is this, talk about. If you would never say that again, you'll be a better speaker. Today I want to talk about. Later on I'm going to talk about. Then we're going to talk about. To me, that's lazy. It's like an old tin can washed up on a beach. There's always better verbs. Do you have something new? Today I would like to introduce to you. Does Microsoft have a new policy? Today I want to explain this new policy. Are you going to do a demonstration of your software or platform? Today I'd like to show you how this works. I like the personal verb share. Today I'd like to share with you. And another tip, I didn't put it on the slide, but it's this. If possible, can you divide your presentations into countable sections? Use a number. Today I'd like to introduce you to two new products, three new products. And if you're looking for the best arbitrary number, it's always three. Three has the longest history in human communication. It's in religion. It's in storytelling. I know in the United States, when people grew up, they learned Goldilocks and the Three Bears, the Three Little Pigs, the Three Blind Mice, the Three Billy Goat Scruff, the Three Stooges, the Three Musketeers, Snow White, and the Three Dwarfs. Remember all those? Gotcha. I think there were seven. By the way, here's the pattern. If you're ever giving a list of three as a writer or speaker, here's the pattern. Give us your shortest item first, the longer item second, and the longest item third. Short, longer, longest. As in life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Or friends, Romans, countrymen. Hear that nice cadence? So today I will, and then you'd follow with what you are going to present, and then the important part, the promise. And the magic words of marketing are, so that you will. What can you promise people they will gain by listening to you? One word you can almost always use is the word understand. And I want to give you the definition of understand right now. To understand means to stand under, which means to support. If you want support for anything you're working on, a program, a project, an idea, or a cause, help people understand it. Because in life, if we don't understand something, what do? We fear it, or we fight it, or both. So you can say, so that you will understand or better understand. And add a second benefit if you can. What will they be able to do? What will they be able to undertake as a result of your presentation? People want benefits. Very few speakers in the world do this. They just say, today I'm going to talk about, and go on from there. No. Make sure you include the audience so that you will. What I'm saying to you, I have described thoroughly also on the other pages, like page 2, for example. So I'll just reference that. So that's the promise. Now, here's the promise line that I would use if I'm doing the dirty water idea. So I would say to you this. Today, I will introduce you to a product called Life Straw, so that you will understand how contaminated water can be made drinkable and how you can help people everywhere to have safe water to drink. That would be a promise line for that product. Now, and then I would introduce the product. And this is an actual product, a great product that's created. It's a straw that people can put in any kind of contaminated water and suck it through. It's got all kind of filters inside. And I've worked with someone in Seattle who spread this around and used it in Sierra Leone in West Africa. It's an amazing product that campers can use, people who do hiking, anyone in the world. If you want clean water, you can just use this straw to do it. So that's the product. So you would introduce what you've done, and if you're introducing what you've created like an innovation, you might describe your team, your approach, which you probably did in the presentation you've already given, what you learned, and then this product, your final solution. Then we're going to the third phase, which is you've got to prove it. You've got a picture of the problem, you've promised them a solution, and now you prove it. There's three forms of proof that work really well. This is also three things that can be used when you are writing an article, for example. First of all, do you have statistics? Do you have numbers that prove that what you're saying is true or accurate? We often rely on numbers and statistics or specifications. Second thing is quotations from authorities. Who agrees with you? What experts in the field support what you're doing? And the third example is success stories, actual cases. Let me give you an example of that. Let's say I make a statement that serious crime is on the rise in Seattle. I'll use where I live. Serious crime is on the rise in Seattle. If I make that statement, now I've got to prove it, and I can use three things. First, I can give statistics. Last year, there were 54 murders in Seattle. However, giving one number doesn't prove anything, does it? You have to have at least two numbers to show them comparatively. Because if the year before there were 100, then actually the number had gone down. Second thing, if I use the statement, serious crime is on the rise in Seattle, who could I quote as an authority on that topic? Who would be an expert? The local police chief, the FBI statistics or whatever, and if they agree. And the third thing is to use an actual case. So I could say, there's a woman named Cynthia Rogers, 37 years old. She came home from shopping. She drove in her driveway and she noticed her front door was open. She went inside the house and she was mugged by a robber who beat her and killed her. Now, in feature articles, they're often written that way. You'll see these in magazines and newspapers. They actually start the article with a story about the person, the story. Then they go on, serious crime is on the rise in Seattle. Then you give statistics, you give quotations. So, for the Life Straw, I looked on their website, look at the list of benefits they have. It filters, this one straw can filter 264 gallons. It removes 99.99% of all contaminants. It's only 2 ounces. It's clean, uses no chemicals. It's been used since 2005. It's award-winning. It's less than $20 on Amazon. It's $19.99 or something. And anybody could use it. Here's a technique I want to point out also. If you're doing a list on a slide of four or more items, use two different colors. So you alternate the colors. They make the information stand out one from the other better. Now, let me continue with the final phrase, the push. Here's where you make the ask. You want people to do what you're doing. And I know a lot of inventors, creators, a lot of ordinary people are afraid to ask, like to ask for money or ask for a contract. It takes courage to do that, and you need to do it. But what you do is you invite people to try this. You encourage them to take this action that you're suggesting. Why? So that they can gain the benefits that you have promised. And whatever you're doing, maybe you want them to adopt, to buy something, to sign a contract, to reach an agreement. We have to ask or we won't receive. I mean, it's that simple, isn't it? Now, How do you open? I'm going to give you an outline now of how I suggest the steps to take in that opening, to use those four elements. I always recommend you begin every presentation with a greeting, usually the time of day. Good morning, good afternoon. If you don't like the people, try this. Good grief. Okay. Besides the greeting words like good morning, add at least one line that's complimentary so they get used to the sound of your voice. So it's like this, good morning, thank you so much for being here. Or it's great to be back in your city again. I know when I work in Reno, Nevada for Microsoft, I've done a lot of workshops there. I always start this way in Reno. Good morning, it's great to be back in Reno again. This is the city where I was married. So I have that in common with the city. Then they ask me, what chapel? I don't remember the name of the chapel, but boy, do I remember the ceremony. It lasted 15 minutes. It cost us $15. And when we were done, we were handed a plastic bag full of soaps and detergents. That's what they do in Reno. I guess it worked because now, 42 years later, we're still washing dishes together. Anyway, when you're talking to strangers, the truth is they've never heard your voice before. And your voice is a hologram of who you are. And so when you do this greeting like good morning, by adding a sentence, they get used to the way you speak. Do you have an accent? What mood are you in? How excited are you? Are you loud or soft? Do you talk real fast or real slow? All that's communicated right at the beginning with a greeting and a complimentary line. Then next I say this to everyone. Do not tell people your name at the beginning of a presentation. So many people start, good morning, my name is. Nobody cares who you are. Who do the people in the audience care most about?
Themselves.
In fact, they suspect that you're going to make matters worse because you are going to be more boring than the last speaker was. I say save your name. Hold it out temporarily. Talk to them first. You want to be audience-centered, connect with them first. And that's why I recommend you go from greeting to a question and then to a promise before you even say your name, or say your name after the question. So you've got the greeting and then the picture. And the picture of the problem you would state as a question. Like, what would it be like if you turn on the water and nothing came out or something like that? Now tell them your name. And if you need to, give brief credentials. Who are you? Why are you qualified to talk about this topic? What's your background or whatever? But don't spend a long time there necessarily. Then make the promise. Today I will, so that you will. And then you can go on and continue with the body of your presentation where you prove that what you've created or have to offer works. And then you ask for the sale at the end. So those are the elements of the content or the development, those four phases. Now I want to move to the delivery part. And I want to give you four things also. Words, visuals, your voice, and your body. First, the words. I think the most important thing normally is you want to speak the language of your listeners. If you're a techie person and you're talking to laymen or even sometimes some managers at Microsoft, you may be speaking a different language. You want to use the language of the people in the room. Tech people can talk to tech people, right? Developers can talk to developers. They speak the same language. I think that's really important. And again, remember, you're talking about them. Not just to an audience or for an audience, but about an audience. That's best. And so you use the word you all the time. So for example, I hear many people start presentations like this. How many people out there? Huh? How many people out there? Are there people out there? Is there a wall? No. Personalize it. It's always how many of you, like this. How many of you can still remember your first lobotomy? Don't ask that question. I have two trick questions for you though. Ready? These are really tricky. First, how many of you hate to raise your hands in public? And second, this is even deeper. How many of you believe in telekinesis? Raise my hand. That's pretty deep. Okay. Anyway, you've got to get the words that are going to connect with an audience, describe your product or whatever and so on. Next is visuals. Now, I want to give you some PowerPoint tips. Again, I've written a book on PowerPoint. I've taught it at Microsoft and so on. And I tend not to use it. And when I do training at Microsoft, I've had sessions at Microsoft in Redmond, and I say to them sometimes, a small group, today I'm not going to use PowerPoint. And they all say, yeah! Let me ask you, PowerPoint is a wonderful tool that Microsoft has developed, no question about it. But it's the way it's used by people. What have you seen that turns you off about people's use of PowerPoint? Anyone?
Too much text on the slide.
Yeah, it's very common to take everything you'd have on a printed page and put it on a slide. Yes, there's sometimes you can't really read it. There's confusing backgrounds or the colors. It's like putting yellow on white backgrounds. It doesn't seem to work well.
Death by a million slides.
Yes. Yeah, there's funny sayings like death by PowerPoint, power pointless. Or my favorite line is a play on Lord Acton's line, power corrupts, PowerPoint corrupts absolutely. It doesn't have to though, does it? I've been an artist my entire life. I've studied art at four universities and so on, and here's one of the things I've learned, and I have it described for you on this in this booklet. If you want to quickly turn to page number 4, you'll see what I mean. Your opening template in PowerPoint is always a white or clear background. And that's fine if you're going to use a lot of text, but what I recommend if you're going to speak from it, do this. I use black as the background. And it's because of an optical illusion, which I've illustrated for you on page 4 on the left. White against dark, black always looks bigger than black against white. Therefore, you will see, for example, in the United States, all interstate highway signs are dark green background, white letters. In China, they're dark blue with white letters. Those letters glow. So having a dark background, it kind of illuminates the light colors. The typeface I recommend for PowerPoint almost always is Tahoma Bold. Seagull Bold is nice, but you can see the difference in size. Tahoma Bold, that's the same size, but Tahoma Bold looks bigger. I would say this about typefaces on slides. Never use Times New Roman on a slide. Any typeface that is a serif typeface that has the little curly cues on the ends of the letters, they can disappear in a room that's not very well lighted, and they do not have the impact of a solid typeface like Tahoma. All right, Arial Bold or Arial Black works well too. I recommend this sequence. If you have a title slide, let the second slide you show people be the question. What's the one biggest question you will answer in your presentation? Put that. Fill a slide with a question. And honestly, the best way to begin any question where you want an audience to participate is to begin with these three words. How can we? How can we invites creative action. I did one for King County, the county where Seattle is at, King County Council. How can we increase county revenue without raising taxes? That became the focus. If you have two big questions you're going to answer, I have two slides. Let that be the second slide. Now everyone is focused on where you're going. As a design principle, and this is universal for all cultures, when you create a slide or any printed material, put pictures on the left, text on the right. That's the way the eyes and the brain process information. Our left eye wants pictures, our right eye is the reader. Now, I'm giving you this as a half-truth because we can read with both eyes, we can see pictures with both eyes. But in designing things, at least 9 times out of 10, that's going to be the best layout, whether you're doing a business card, a website, or anything. Pictures toward the left or top, text to the right. And let me give you now the best technique of all for using slides. This is the absolute best technique. In school, I know in America, a lot of kids learned or did this thing called show and tell. A kid would bring something to school and show it to the class and talk about it, show and tell. But when you're doing PowerPoint, when you're showing slides, do the reverse. Tell and show. In other words, before you show your next slide, preview it. So you create mystery and suspense. This is done on television often. After the commercial, they'll give little teasers, right? You can do the same thing, you build mystery. Most people just show the next slide, everybody in the room looks at it. Are we supposed to read this? Preview the next slide. Now, you have to know what's coming next to do that, but that's what's really important. It makes the whole program much more interesting. Preview what's coming next. So I've got to preview what's coming next for you. By the way, any questions or observations on PowerPoint?
I'll ask one question, and I certainly, animations. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a good question. PowerPoint has so many possibilities. Animations is one of them. And also things like, you know, you can put videos, anything on. whatever helps the audience to get what you want. The trouble with animations, sometimes PowerPoint becomes like a box of crayons that you give to a kid. They want to use every color. The simpler, the better. The animation I would use most often is fly in from the left. I'll have something slide like one line at a time. That simple animation always works well. You don't have to use a lot. Again, here's an example of alternating two colors. Let me make one other point that may surprise you, but here's what I say to people all over the world. Stop using bullets. Stop using bullets as your first choice. Now, here's what I mean. Notice, this is a list. A list is one of the greatest formats in writing. But if you're going to give an audience a list, think first of numbering the list, not bulleting the list. And I want to give you three reasons why numbers are better. First, if the information you're presenting has order or sequence, like there are steps to take, numbers communicate steps automatically. Step one, step two, step three. The second advantage of numbers over bullets, numbers can communicate value. Our first priority this quarter, our second priority, numbers communicate value. Number one is best, right? Number two is second best. A third advantage of numbers over bullets, you can refer to them. If I have a slide here with 10 bulleted points, how do I describe the sixth one? Do I say bullet six? That's silly. In school, we did not learn to bullet. We learned to count. Now, bullets are fine, but I save them for random information. When there's no order, no value, or no reference I need to, then I use bullets. But I use as a first choice always, can I number the list rather than bullet it? Next is your voice. Ready? I'm going to give you the most important thing I could say to you today or any day, and I teach this all over the world, and almost no one in the world I've encountered knows this. When you speak English, here's what you absolutely must do to sound confident, decisive, like you know what you're talking about. When you reach the end of whatever you're saying, whether it's a single word, a phrase, or a sentence, here's what you must do. You must drop your pitch. The last syllable always must go down, never up. Now, why? Well, English comes from Europe. The English language was born in Europe. It's an Indo-European system. Within this system of languages, we end all declarative sentences by dropping our pitch. This tells the listener, ah, he's finished. It's over. There's a sense of finality and totality. The same is true of many world languages. Russian goes down firmly on endings. Polish, German, European Romance languages. Asian languages are completely different. At least they're called tonal languages. They are subtle pitch changes. Some languages want to go up on the end. Scandinavians sometimes will go up. Even Canadians, for example, will often end a phrase, how? Eh? Eh? Do you know what, by the way? They did that. They do that so much in Canada, they actually decided to spell their country's name that way. Do you know that? C-A-N-A-D-A? No. Now, sometimes when we speak, we will end a line with a rising inflection. When do we do that? When else? Most people think of questions. Well, I'm here to tell you we've been totally misinformed our entire life. And ESL teachers are misinforming people every single day. Here's the truth. Every question that starts with those interrogative pronouns, who, what, where, when, why, how, those questions are always asked properly by dropping your pitch at the end. Like this. How old are you? Where do you live? When are you going to start working around here? The only question in English where you're tempted to go up at the end is a yes or no question. Right? Are you okay? You just don't want to work here? But you don't have to do that either. Let me give you three examples of a yes or no question that's asked better by going down at the end. A retail example. Walk into a store, a clerk may come up to you and say this. Can I help you? Can I help you? What's the answer to that? It's going to be yes or no. Get out of my face. What I recommend to people in retail and in customer service is this. Start that line with the word how and go down at the end. How can I help you? How can I help you? Got that? Another example. I worked with a woman who was a crime investigator. She had to call 200 police officers in the Seattle area who all showed up at a murder scene. She asked the question on the phone like this. Did you fill out a report on this incident? Did you fill out a report on this incident? It's clearly a yes or no question, but I said to her, look, Here's a better way to ask that same question and go down at the end. Did you fill out a report on this incident? Hear that? The key word is report. You go up for emphasis, down on endings. Did you fill out a report on this incident? That's the difference. One more example. What's your name again? What? Anu.
Yep.
Okay. Let's say you and I work together, and I'm your boss. You come to work, and you're not feeling well, okay? I'm going to ask you a question, four words. The words are you okay? But I'm going to ask it two ways. See if you can notice the difference. So I can say, Anu, are you okay? Are you okay? Or I can ask it this way. Are you okay? Notice the first way. Are you okay? Sounds like I'm concerned about your condition. But when I ask it this way, are you okay? It sounds like I'm concerned about you. Hear the difference? And that's a yes or no question. So I would say that 90% of all questions are asked better by dropping your pitch at the end. And it's so important for everything. Take a look at this. Here's an example of what I just said to you. Are you okay? Are you okay? Now, let's apply this to the most important words you will ever say, and that is your own name. Let me show you how to say your own name, and I want you to try it right here in the room. When you say your name, there's two models. If you have a short name, not many syllables, think of steps. Okay? I'm Bill Smith. I'm Hongying Lu. Always go down at the end of your name, even if your native language does not do that. If you're speaking like in a Western context, a Western world where English is spoken, to help them understand you better, go down in pitch on the last syllable, like this. I'm Zhang Lidong. The other model is if you have a long name, many syllables, think of rounding it, like this. I'm Elizabeth Montgomery. Put a slight pause after your first name between the two. I'm Sue Jones. Got that? So try it with the person next to you. Say your name. See if you could drop your pitch at the end. Just try it. Could you do it? Who's got a difficult name? Anyone have a difficult name to say? Yes. Okay, next. That's okay. I didn't hear it. The first name is
Anastasia.
Anastasia. That's a long name.
Anastasia, yes.
Last name is
Kinda.
Kinda. Yeah. I would definitely want to do yours in an arc. Anastasia. I'd go up on that. Anastasia. Pause, and then Kinda or whatever. Anastasia. Kinda. That's how I'd say your name. I think it could be done on steps. I'm Anastasia Kinga. That would work too. In broadcasting, it's often done the staircase model. I'm Jesse Jones, King 5 News. It's often done that way. All right. And that's really important. When you say your name, end it with a period and a pause. Do not connect your name to what's coming next, which is the temptation. Because we connect in English often by going up. If you ask me the days of the week, I might say Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. In broadcasting, and I've studied broadcasting and coached people for American television, everything in a list is rounded down. So I'd say to you, the days of the week are Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. If you're giving a list of benefits of your product, like it's fast, it's economical, and it's ready to go. My product has three wonderful benefits. First, it's fast. Second, it's economical. And third, it's ready to go. Put everything in rounded phrases. Same when you begin your presentation. It's good morning. Notice it's a rounded phrase where you go down. Thank you so much for being here. I have a question for you. How many of you, see, short rounded phrases work best. And that is the model I recommend. Speak short phrases, not long rambling sentences. You do not need to speak sentences when you speak. You speak ideas. They're called idea units or thought units. The best average in the world is 7 words. This comes from the study of a man named George Miller in 1956. He reached the conclusion that in our short-term memory, we can easily recall 7 items, plus or minus 2. So we have a range of about 5 to 9 words or numbers that are easy to understand. And follow them with a short pause. The Chinese have a proverb, when the words end, the meaning flows on. Too many speakers rush. You need at least part of a second to grasp what someone just said. Speak in short phrases, followed by short pauses. Now, to get your ideas across, you've got to use emphasis. I said go down on endings, but you pitch up for emphasis. So here's a sentence for you. The sentence is, Ming doesn't kiss his wife. Ready? Here's the first way it might be said. Ming doesn't kiss his wife. Next, Ming doesn't kiss his wife. Third, Ming doesn't kiss his wife. Next, Ming doesn't kiss his wife. Whose wife does he kiss? Finally, Ming doesn't kiss his wife. Now he kisses only his children. The word in a sentence you choose to emphasize will change the meaning of that whole sentence. And in every sentence, there's usually one key idea, which is usually in one word, sometimes two. And what do you do to make that idea stand out? You go up in pitch. So if it's the fourth one there, the word his I want to emphasize, I would do it like this. Ming doesn't kiss his wife. That brings out the meaning. And the higher you go up on the key word, the more dynamic you sound as a speaker. Most people in the world sound like a flat desert. Very little vocal, you know, emphasis. And that's the key. So these are the summary of the speak in short phrases, followed by short pauses. Pitch up for emphasis. Pitch down on endings. Do that and you can deliver a great pitch. Yes? You pitch up on the word, but the last syllable always must go down. Ming doesn't kiss his wife. Or if I want to say, going to the Imagine Cup finals is wonderful. I want to emphasize, the whole word goes, it's wonderful. But the last syllable, which is different from the Imagine Cup finals, are wonderful. Hear the difference? The last syllable has to go down to make you sound confident and decisive. That's the key. All right, let me continue now with part of the delivery part, the body language. I would say by far the most important thing any speaker can ever do is this, is to look into the eyes of one person at a time in a room for 1 or 2 seconds. It is amazing how poorly this is done by all world leaders I've seen on television. Their eyes are down at their notes if they don't have teleprompters. What's wrong with the people in the world? Don't they know what they're talking about? Do they have brains, guts, hearts, memories? By God, look us in the eyes and talk to us. And if you have a script, like a manuscript, that's fine. And I have on the bottom of page 4 how to write a speech. Don't write it in paragraphs. Write it in short phrases. Like I said, speak in short phrases. Write it in short phrases. So you have a list of lines. Your hand can slide down the edge of the page. But look into our eyes for 1 second or two. In the middle of the room, the back of the room, eye contact should be random around a room, not mechanical like this. No, random. When you begin a presentation, put on a friendly face, okay? And it's been found, I've seen in European research, if you begin your presentation with a friendly face, people want to believe you automatically. So at least start with a friendly face at the beginning and at the end. Let a smile be the bookends of your presentation. Would you all stand up? I want to demonstrate standing right now. Would you stand? I'm going to come out here to demonstrate this. I want to make a couple of recommendations. When you stand, get your feet apart about as wide as your shoulders, but do this. Do not stand with parallel feet. This is totally unnatural. And every kid in the world is raised this way. Our body is not made that way. Our body is made to have the heels closer with toes fanned out. This creates automatic pelvic tilt and natural hip rotation. I recommend when you stand to speak, get planted. Glue your feet to the floor. Don't move your feet when you speak. Everything from the ankles up should be as loose as a goose. Can you do this? Can you pivot side to side? Can you raise your hands as high as your shoulders? If you can do that, you can do whatever you want. I say this because I have videotaped now 16,000 presentations in the last 30 years. Here's what nervous speakers tend to do. They'll rise like this, or they start doing this, back and forth, rocking. Women in high heels start doing this, or they kick a high heel out and rock on it. Men do this, they start their own private Boston Marathon, back and forth like a caged panther. Audiences do not like a moving target. Get planted. If you want to move, fine. If I want to move somewhere else, I'll move somewhere else. But when you get here, get planted. Avoid aimless wandering. Another thing about standing, if it's a formal event, I wore a tie because I think of this as a formal event. dress vertically, wear lines that go north and south. If you're wearing a tie, a man's tie should reach the belt buckle or lower. If my tie is like this, I have a horizontal band of belly sticking out, makes me look shorter and heavier. You want to dress tall. Okay, you can sit down. I want to do hands next. Hands are if you scare people. Here's five famous hand positions. I did not invent these, but I'll pass them on. Here's what speakers often do. First, the closed defensive look. This is called the bear hug, this closed defensive posture. Maybe the person just cold. Next is done by people who are raised Catholic, very religious people. Their hands go like this, into prayer-like positions. The eyes glance up for divine assistance. Third, the flesh wound. The speaker is applying a tourniquet to his arm to stop the bleeding. Fourth is a multi-purpose hand position, parade rest, the firing squad experience, or the fanny warmer. And number five is the classic all-time favorite speaker's hand position, the fig leaf. Right? Did you notice the fig leaves on the statues yesterday at the... Yeah. That's a nice old Renaissance tradition of the Catholic Church. We must not show the genital area, right? Okay. Here's a new one someone told me. T-Rex. All right. What do you do with your hands? I want to make three, want to say this. Don't do anything with your hands. Forget them, because your hands are the smartest part of your body, if you think about it. Everything we've ever done in our life, we've done with our hands. Starting out as an infant, crawling on our hands and knees, walking as an adult, we swing our hands to counterbalance. Hands are smart. Get out of their way. Don't do this. There's a man in Seattle I know who took a class in gesturing for actors. Afterwards, he got up to give a speech, and he was rusty. So here's what he did. Today, I want to present two ideas. No, doesn't work, does it? If I'm going to show you two, I've already done it. Hands come before the words. So let me add three tips. I have this in the booklet here. If you want your gesture to be more of an art form, first of all, use both hands, not just one. Keep your hand shoulder high or higher, because people look at you from this area mostly, from the crown of your head to your sternum, to the width of your shoulders. This area appears on a television monitor, for example. You want your hands to work in and out of that area. And finally, gesture with live fingers, open hands, like you're holding a beach ball. That works well. If you're showing an audience something, here's the preferred technique. Always hold it so it's on the viewer's right. My face is on the left, this is on the right. Because we read left to right in our culture, left is a place of prominence. This puts you in prominence over your material. And hold it up next to your face, steady, for 5 or more seconds. Too many people say, can you all see this? And the poor audience sits there and they can't. One other thing, if you're sitting and speaking, such as at a meeting or you're meeting with people you're proposing your project to, lean forward. Don't sit back in your chair, don't sit straight upright, but lean slightly forward. And when you do that, I can guarantee two wonderful things happen. You look younger and more alive and more dynamic when you lean forward. I have a brother in Detroit, Michigan, my hometown, who's a portrait photographer. He's won every award in the U.S. for his portraits. And he told me the secret of getting a great picture. You always have the subject lean head first toward the camera. Not the head, it's from the waist. He said two things happen. Your wrinkles and double chins recede, and the clothing on the front of your body hangs more flatly. So I figure if this works for photography, this should work for us in person. Now, some of us who have a lot of wrinkles and double chins, we probably have to do this. All right. So those are some of the body language tips. All right. My time has run out. And so I found this wonderful quotation. This is the Imagine Cup. And the word imagine is wonderful. Emerson, the great poet, said this, whatever appeals to the imagination wonderfully encourages and liberates us. And that's what you're trying to do with your project, your games, right, your world inventions. And I can say, may your pitch capture their imagination. And my final slide is a closing slide, and it's a great line to use. Jack Welch used to use it at GE. Thank you for listening. And notice this is a typeface. Here I'm using this. This is fly in from the left. It's kind of like medium speed. Oftentimes I use very fast when I'm studying that kind of a thing against a Russian background. And then please fill out the evaluation sheet. Thank you so much for listening. It's a pleasure to be able to share ideas with you. And you'll find many more on the handout I've given you. Thank you. And before you go, because I'm a former Catholic priest, we will take up a collection. kidding. Yes. As a former priest, I like to kid people. I can still hear your confession. I just can't forgive you. Yes, yeah. Just trying to forgive them for being slow. We have plenty of extra handouts if you want to take an extra one or so.
That's exactly what I was just coming up for.
Oh, great.
I just wanted to say thank you. That was extremely good.
Great. Very impressive. Glad you enjoyed it. Thank you.
Because I'm always very interested in like all the little nuances of like delivering speeches, but it's so hard to find those little tips that you were giving. You know, just the simple things like keep your feet out, you know, even things like lean forward. Cause, you know, you just can't really Google that sort of thing. It takes years of experience. So that was
well, I'm glad you appreciate it. Thank you. And you're Dominic,
yes? Yes, I'm Dominic.
Oh, from Australia. Good.
From Australia.
Down under.
Yes, a little while away.
Yeah, great. Thanks, Dominic. I'm doing this presentation again at 10:15 in room 11, the next room. So, thank you.